Morning, birds. Busy out there today. Birds today commemorate something that a long, long time ago, actually this building was just being built in 1918 on the 11th hour of the 11th day. War ended. Today we call that Veterans Day. And I'll tell you what, if we can't get you out of bed with a bugle, then we're not doing our job.
He was a famous trumpet man from out Chicago way, and he had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft, but then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, he's blowing reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he could not jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next day the cap went out and drafted a fan. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. A root, a toot, a tootly, a toot. He blows an eight to the bar in boogie rhythm. He can't blow a note unless a bass and guitar is playing with him. And the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He was the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. And when he plays boogie woogie bugle, he was busy as a boozy bee. And when he plays, he made the company jump eight to the bar. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. And out of tootly, out of tootly, out of toot toot, he blows an eight to the bar. Them up the same way in the early fright. They clap their hands and stamp their feet, cause they know how it goes when someone gives them a beat. Whoa, whoa, he breaks it up when he plays reveille. The boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. A root, a toot, a tootie, a toot, a toot, a toot, he blows an eight to the bar. Yeah, can't blow a note of a bass and guitars and whoa, with him. And the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B.
I want to put my hand behind my ear when I come out of that. Emanating from Chicago, Bette Midler with a take on the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B. That was a big hit done by the McGuire sisters, I think. Anyway, Bette updated a little bit for us. It is Veterans Day. It is the 11th of November. And yeah, this started way back when. Yeah, it's true. We come to you from a building, a studio in a building in Chicago. It was built just about the end of World War One, I should say. And that Armistice Day became Veterans Day, and that's where we are today. So lots to think about today. We're going to talk to a fellow. I just looked at this dude's deal. He's 19 years old. And he is interviewing surviving veterans of World War II while they are still with us. How about we'll put it that way? Anyway, we're going to talk to him a little bit later this hour. That's cooking. And we will have an opportunity to talk to ourselves about all these things that we remember. George Patton has a birthday today. What are the chances of that happening? We're going to play a clip from Patton, which is my favorite war movie, and as luck would have it, it's Patton's birthday today. Wow. Anyway, that going on. Patriotic music, I put that in quotes. Someone sent me, I won't out her, a song by Johnny Cash called the Ragged Old Flag. I don't think I've ever heard that one. Anyway, we'll get to that one today, so. We'll do some stuff, and it's Leo DiCaprio's birthday. I get a chance to play something from one of his wiggiest movies. So, all reasons to be in good form today. We'll start with the news. The president-elect, Mr. Biden, moving ahead with his transition plans despite the White House's lack of cooperation. I'm going to save you some time on that one in a second or two. Judges have dismissed several of President Trump's lawsuits in key battleground states already. I was up late reading a long article in the Washington Post. I'll try to encapsulate for you. So we can all do something else for the next couple of months here. The Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, seems like it's in pretty good shape as the first day of the Supreme Court, conservative Supreme Court, had a look at it. They appeared to express skepticism, says Apple News, over the effort to strike down that health care law. You know, the Republicans have tried to just sort of amputate pieces of it, and that isn't going to work for them. So that's cooking. All right, now, big headline in the New York Times, election officials nationwide find no fraud. Can we do that with echo? Find no fraud. I point out the Times. They have a somewhat larger staff than you or I. They contacted every Secretary of State in the United States and asked them, did you see anything that, was kind of, hokey? And they got nothing from anybody doing that. So that's the background here. I'll zip through this. What we're doing right now is we're coming into the moment when they certify the election, the one in which you and I voted in. We won. Six states where President Trump has threatened to challenge his defeat continue their march toward declaring certified results. That's going to be happening here. That's Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Now, to start with, in the sense, this was a close election, but it wasn't a close election. For Trump to have anything going on here, he would have to reverse the vote counts of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, all of these, not just one, not just two. All right. So to start with, that's ridiculous. Even some of the president's most publicly pugilistic aides, including White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, I think is COVID positive at the moment, Republican National Committee committee chairwoman Ronna McDaniel, and also Corey Lewandowski, remember him? He is now officially an informal advisor. They don't think it's going to go anywhere. In the states, Democratic and some Republican officials said that they have seen no evidence of fraud on a scale sufficient to overturn the results. There's just no evidence of widespread voter fraud. The vote counting is going to go like this. Beginning in December, which is a couple of weeks away now, it should all be over in Georgia. The deadline for county certification is November 13th. Now, they will do an audit in Georgia. After which the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, who's a Republican, will certify the results no later than November 20th. All right, so that's Georgia. In Arizona, the county canvassing goes to the Secretary of State. That gets certified by November 30th. In Michigan, the law requires that the state certify on November 23rd. You with me? I'm almost done. Because all this is in the next few weeks here, next couple of weeks. In Nevada, the date is November 24th. In Wisconsin, it is typically December 1. In Pennsylvania, there's no statewide deadline, but counties must certify the results by November 23rd. I'm at one quote here, This is Kathy Cox. She is a former Secretary of State in Georgia. She's a Democrat, but she says, quote, with a 12,000 vote outcome, they'd have to show some irregularity, some fraud, some error in quantity that exceeded 12,000 votes statewide. And she said, if you come up with 100 votes that were ineligible, it's going to be a big so what. Let's do that with an echo. A big so what. All right, there we go. You know, let's wrap it because I want to get on to something else. We're going to call up Aaron not the news baron. Today Aaron is the science baron. He is the baron of many, many, many bits of information. We're going to get an update on some things that I have missed in the world of science. I got to say this. All right, somebody asked me the other day what the meaning of jump the shark means. It was relating to a TV series. If you don't know about that, there was a TV show called Happy Days, starring Fonz, Henry Winkler as the Fonz. And as the show had just run out of steam and just no, you know, it was a show that had high ratings and very popular. They had just sort of, they were done, you know. They did an episode in which there was a, the Fonz had to ride a motorcycle and jump across a, wait, I should have had, wait, hang on, I should have put that somewhere. There, all right, yeah, that's, there it is. He had to jump across this pool with a shark in it, all right? And that episode, it was sort of the signal that the show was done. It had its run, it was done. And so that's what jump the shark means. Jump the shark in the role of the Trump reality show. It's right now. He is jumping the shark. They're done. They had nothing going on here. And it's interesting. I looked at this. They were saying at the end of this article how everybody really in the inside Trump orbit says that it's done, you know, but except for like Ivanka, Ivanka and Rudy Giuliani. So you heard it here first. If anything changes, I will let you know. Billie Holiday had her first hit on this day, long time ago. Let's listen to it. It's called Riffin' the Scotch. Was that a cork popping there? It was. That's Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday had her first hit record on this day while it started. On this day in 1933, that's called Rippin' the Scotch. I play a lot of Billie Holiday, as much as I could get in. It's a quarter past the hour on Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago. It's Gary Lee Wright on Bleat.network. And it is, in fact, Veterans Day.
To all our veterans, I want you to know that I know the sacrifice you've made the bravery you've shown in the face of danger, the operations you've experienced, the missions, and the training. I know you've seen things that I can't even imagine. I know you've been away on long deployments, and I know your family has had to carry on while you were gone. I know you've lost brothers and sisters on and off the battlefield. I know you have protected our country, and that without you, I would never be as safe or as secure, or that America would be as strong. I appreciate everything that you have done, and I thank you for your service. I just wanted you to know that.
As a noted scientist. God, we need some science. We really do. We've done without science for the last 4 years here. But, things are going to change here. Hang on. No, we need a science because I just can't get my fingers on the right button. There it is. Good morning to... Aaron, the science baron. Hey, Aaron.
Good morning, Gary.
My heart skipped a beat. Hang on. My whole show used to be based on this kind of thing. Here it is. That's it, Aaron. That's it. I should have played more bugles for you there. So Aaron joins us. Aaron, we always call Aaron the news baron. In fact, the good news is that science is coming back. Joe Biden has already got some people that are going to be scientific. So what about it? Are you excited?
My twin brother, the news baron, is happy for that sabbatical.
That's good. We're glad you have multiple personalities.
True. Very true.
So, we have a two-person team on the COVID, right? Well, go ahead. Just give me the names or not, but tell me who we're looking at now from Joe's
in terms of
science. Yeah, science.
Oh, gotcha. Well, I don't know the specific names who are on his science panel. I guess you would say transition.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You know, we're on FaceTime. We can see each other, and we talked to each other never when we were on the phone. Now we're looking at each other. I'm putting a hat on my face. Go ahead, talk.
The delay isn't the best, but he has a panel for his transition team. But his transition team is still interviewing people who will be the official, I guess, science. Whiz Kid group of scientists that will be on that panel with people actually enacting policy on behalf of COVID-19.
Whiz Kids. Yeah. Go ahead. I like that.
Yeah, so the official team isn't necessarily set in stone as of yet.
Very good. Okay. They're just, again, for folks that just woke up, the first lady is a doctor. Ms. Biden is a pediatrician, so.
Yes.
Yeah, so cool. All right, yeah. You and I are both scrambling. Names are coming out here, and they are, I'm feeling much better about it. So listen, I missed all this space stuff last week and the week before because this darn election was happening. And
true.
What you sent me a couple things. So what did I miss? What's happening in the world of space?
Well, there's one piece that I was interested in was, we talked about, Mars and colonies on Mars and water on Mars. I guess the long-term goal is there to be a self-sustaining colony on Mars. And Elon Musk is the first person to really tackle this head on. And interestingly, something just came out recently about how they'll govern themselves when they finally get there.
Uh-huh.
And he's basically saying that he's not going to follow any Earth government, you know, any laws that came from any Earth-based government.
Is that right? Well, that's what Trump said. That's what Trump said, too. Now, Musk is, I don't know what to make of this guy. I don't know if he's like an evil genius or just a genius who's something. I don't know. Was he not known, if I'm slandering him or libeling him, I think he got high on a radio interview. Wasn't that Elon Musk we're talking about? So,
yes.
You know, all right,
on the Joe Rogan podcast.
All right, so you're nodding. So I'm inviting him to come on. He doesn't have to even get lit. He can come on straight if he wants. Anytime he, you know. I'll tell you what, I have a med card. If he needs help, I'll send him something. But I'm saying that
right.
At the end of this, all this, we want him to appraise, you know, his sanity and the larger practicality of putting some settlement on Mars. So how does that strike you? You're going to go? You're going to go up there? Or what do you think?
Definitely not. So he's planning on having 1 million people there by 2050, so in 30 years.
Okay.
That's what he's saying. I think that's highly, highly unlikely. And even once you get there, your life would be very boring and not really that high of a quality.
Yeah.
But basically, bigger picture, it's a private company, private, you know, group of individuals who will be governing a group of people. So that's interesting to me.
Why would people want to go? I mean, I shouldn't say that. Let me rephrase my question. I mean, particularly this year, Aaron, I've often said, I would like to be anywhere but right here. I've often said that this year. So I get it, but I'm saying if you pick, you know, Mars, would that be it? People don't want to be on Earth anymore? You know what I'm saying?
That is a big part of it. Trying to escape to something, you know, not established yet.
Right. It isn't like there are great restaurants there yet. Or they, you know, but right. Seriously, the concept, I'm going back, when you and I talk about this, because of the difference in our ages, you know, this is all science fiction for me, and we talked about all these people that, you know, that lived elsewhere and all the stuff that, you know, whenever we talk, I think about like Ray Bradbury and all these people. But now we're in the reality of it now, and like, well, okay, now that it's possible, let's revisit it. That's my question. So, what do you think? Are we going to get? You're saying 1 million seems high. I agree. So you're going to get anybody to do this?
Right, right. Well, that's a good question. I think it's seen more nowadays as an inevitability and as a must than as like a cool thing that will be an interesting thing to do.
Yeah.
Because Musk's perspective on it is, if an extinction level event happens on Earth, like a second Trump term, then we could see, this is the only place that we have.
Yeah.
So if
you
have like a sperm bank, if you will, hate to use those terminology, but on Mars, then at least we'd have two bases of human, you know, genes, genealogy. So that's kind of the perspective on it, how long it would take, how much money it would take, trillions of dollars to even get, you know, a few hundred people there. In his perspective, he's like, well, I'm a private company with private dollars. I'll take this up head on, however long it'll take, however much money, just so we can have this, you know, holdout on Mars.
Listen to Aaron the Science Baron at 24 after the hour. Aaron the Science Baron is going to come in and fill in for yours truly, because I'm going to go to Hawaii and hang out. Maybe I'll take a vacation. And the reason I bring that up is if you go to Hawaii, the cost of living is really high because they don't make anything there. You know, all the gasoline
has to
be shipped out. Food's expensive.
Right.
There's a lot of spam, you know, and spam is big. Hawaii, they still eat more spam. You can go to Hawaii in a restaurant in Hawaii and spam's on the menu, man, because they had to bring everything over. I have over here, I have a guitar that is slack. It's called a slack key tuning. It's just a conventional guitar, but they loosened the strings because it made them last longer. You know why they did that?
Interesting.
Because they had to ship everything over to Hawaii.
Right.
So take out everything I just said and replace Hawaii with Mars. That's where I'm going. Everything has to be sent up there, right? Or no?
Very true. Very true. Yeah, that would be super, super interesting. Hopefully 3D printing will get to a level. Let's say I'm going to throw out there 2070 at least.
2070?
Yes. It'll take a long time. And that's really why it's important that these finding of water on the moon, for instance, and water on Mars, because making everything locally will be the most important thing. So if we can, you know, get a spacecraft out of, you know, the Earth's gravitational pull to the moon, for instance, then refuel on the moon, and then, you know, board up the majority of the bulk weight on the moon, then, you know, go from there. Or we can have like a stop in between, like a secondary international space station. So we basically spend as less gas or energy getting out of Earth's gravitational pull as possible, and then, you know, refueling somewhere else, or having a secondary stop where, say, we're hooked onto an asteroid, we're manufacturing from steel or ores that we're finding there. So it's going to really be a spaced out venture of trying to figure out as many places outside of Earth to get these extra materials and manufacture and get water, for instance. So that's going to be the next new venture you'll see.
You're killing me with this. I am there, man. I just picture this intergalactic rest area where people would pull their spaceship in. But hang on, you mentioned something, and I want to grab you. 3D printers.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Yes. I know what a 3D printer is, but not much. Why? Right. How does the 3D printer fit into all this?
So basically, so manufacturing, if you're you know, using plastics or metals, it's hard to do. You need all this machinery to do so. And actually, on the International Space Station, they have two 3D printers. So I say there's a nut that breaks. So there's a small piece that you would need to literally have an entire spacecraft come from Earth and bring it there. Uh-huh. They can just print it in plastic or in titanium on board.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Very interesting.
And it is extremely interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the... Wow, I'm trying to put my head around that. 3D printers, actually got one. I bought a... I don't usually plug actual companies, but I rank them out for having such a terrible consumer service. Micro Center. Anyway, they have a 3D printer at Micro Center.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I want to go halfies.
I'm down.
Yeah, this is fascinating to me. All right, I love that idea. I mean, that sort of puts a face on the space race, as it were. That there might be something. Not that it's all about Elon Musk, but. You know,
right.
Yeah, I like that idea. Well, the concept, man, of actually living on another planet, that's something.
That's the future.
Yeah, it is the future. It is the future. Hey, you know Leonardo DiCaprio, do you not?
Yes.
Leo's birthday is today. Have you seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street?
I have. It's a great one.
Let me just see. Let's say happy birthday to Leo. You know, I'd like to go to Mars and hang out with him. I think I'm trying to picture there's that scene where he completely destroys his car and they wake up the next morning.
Yes.
I'm hoping I'm thinking of maybe, you know, if Elon Musk were driving. So, Aaron, I'll see you on Mars. If not before,
Interesting little side point. He actually shot one of his cars into space and it's orbiting Earth right now.
Leonardo DiCaprio?
No, Elon Musk.
Oh, no. Okay. All right. Okay. It's going to come back. It's going to look like this. All right, man. Be well.
All right. You too.
See ya.
See those little black boxes? They're called telephones. I'm going to let you on a little secret about these telephones. They're not going to dial themselves, okay? Without you... They're just worthless hunks of plastic, like a loaded M16 without a trained Marine to pull the trigger. And in the case of the telephone, it's up to each and every one of you, my highly trained Stratonites, my killers who will not take no for an answer, my fucking warriors, who will not hang up the phone until their client either buys or fucking dies! Let me tell you something. There is no nobility in poverty. I have been a rich man and I have been a poor man, and I choose rich every f***ing time. Because at least as a rich man, when I have to face my problems, I show up in the back of a limo wearing a $2,000 suit and a $40,000 gold fucking watch.
Well, give it up, ladies and gentlemen, for Elon Musk. No, I'm sorry, for Leo DiCaprio. It's half past the hour.
You can never know what it's like. Your blood like winter freezes just like ice. And there's a cold and lonely light that shines from you. You wind up like the wreck you hide behind that mask you use. And did you think this fool could never win? Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little. Made for men to cut me down. And if my love was just a circus, you'd be a clown by now. No, I'm still standing better than I ever did. Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing.
Elton John. That's a good one. There's a theme. It is 34 after the hour. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago on Veterans Day 2020. Please join us and let us know what you think. In all ways, it's radioanything@gmail.com. And leave us a toll-free voicemail. It's 844-220-3300. All right. Thank you for being part of it all. And thanks to our veterans. Veterans Day is a tough day for people. It's a tough day for people. And we're going to talk to someone who has, been interviewing these folks in just a few minutes here. I'm going to call him up. Rishi Sharma is his name, from the Heroes of the Second World War organization. And, you know, I'll plug this if you want a little bit of a heads up here. We're going to talk about the website heroesofthesecondworldwar.org with Rishi. So, yeah, you know what? I thought that I think the thing that I want to tell you is that I'm a baby boomer, which is the group of people, Americans, that were born after World War II. If you're born in 1946, we won the war. We beat the Nazis and the totalitarian Japanese. And we won the war, and everybody got pregnant in America, and I was one of those kids. That was the baby boomer generation. By the time I was born, we were in the Korean War, which they called a police action. It was the early 50s. I think 1950 would be one year to throw out. By the time I was a toddler, we were already sending non-combatant military personnel to Vietnam. And by the time I was a teenager, we had a full military involvement in Vietnam. And by the time I was 18, I was in the second draft lottery. They reinstituted the draft to get people to go, and there were not enough people that wanted to go. They had a draft lottery, and I told that story on the air. By the way, some of the stuff is in this book I wrote, and that's free. It's a free text. All right, if you want to read any of this stuff, some of that is background. Anyway, I was in the second draft lottery. I was not drafted. And in doing this book, let me reach over because I want to get the right number here. It's Happiness for Beginners, by the way. Gary Lee Wright with two R's and Gary, two E's and Lee, and Wright with a W, W-R-I-G-H-T. Happiness for Beginners, and I believe happinessforbeginners.com is a live website, and there is a free taste, the entire book, for your dining and dancing pleasure is there. All right, I'm reading the end of this chapter that I talked about being in college. Okay, here we go. Higher education finally ended for me, some would say just in time, but it took a special occasion, the second draft lottery of the Vietnam War. I always hated that conflict, but to this day I feel guilty about not serving in it. 3 million people my age did, more than 58,000 did not come back. Their motivation was their legacy. They were patriots. But in 1970, all I knew was that I wasn't ready to join the Army, ours or anybody else's, and some of my peers felt the same way, and so the draft lottery was supposed to even things out. The numbers picked corresponded to birthdays, the lowest ones being the first recipients of a letter from the Defense Department. The night of the drawing, up in Whitewater, Wisconsin, not so far from here, everybody who was 18 paid attention. This was bigger than Powerball. There were two roommates in my dorm. One's birthday came up in the high 300s. The other was number two. That meant Jim would be staying home with his girlfriend and his baseball cards. Joe would be going to trade shells with the Viet Cong, whoever they were. It was literally the luck of the draw. Now, my birthday came up 336, meaning I no longer needed my student deferment. I left college a few months later, and I never served in the military. When the Vietnam veterans came back, they were mercilessly abused by people. Finally, the word was oppose the war, but not the warrior. So that's what I want to say about that part of it. A book came out a couple of years ago called The Good War, and they go back to the story of that I just told you, the beginning of my life, which was World War II. Oddly enough, one of the heroes of World War II is General George Patton, and it is also his day today, his birthday. If there's one war movie that I say is worth watching, it's probably this one, an Oscar winner in spades. And here he is.
I want you to remember that no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
Proudly we hail, and that's why. the home of the brave. Hey, yeah.
To all our veterans, I want you to know that I know. I know the sacrifice you've made, the bravery you've shown in the face of danger, the operations you've experienced, the missions, and the training. I know you've seen things that I can't even imagine. I know you've been away on long deployments, and I know your family has had to carry on while you were gone. I know you've lost brothers and sisters on and off the battlefield. I know you have protected our country, and that without you, I would never be as safe or as secure, or that America would be as strong. I appreciate everything that you have done, and I thank you for your service. I just wanted you to know that.
Some missions don't take a holiday. Some work must go on. Standing guard, keeping the peace, lending a hand. This is our chance to lend one back. There are more than 1 million active duty service members stationed around the world. And this holiday season, hundreds of thousands of them will remain on duty. On the water, on patrol, away from home. Now more than ever, they need your help to bridge the distance to family, home, and country. So this year, as you celebrate your favorite traditions, take a moment to send a piece of home to our nation's heroes, because even the smallest gesture can lighten the load. Be a force behind the forces. Visit uso.org/holidays to send the gift of home to our service members.
All right. Okay. I was on the phone there. It's live radio here. It is 16 before the hour here. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio. I'm trying to shake up our guest here. I'm not sure what the deal is here. We will see. We will see. I'll tell you what, while we're doing that, we play all kinds of music here on the Pandemic Pirate Show. Wake up music, music that's appropriate, music that I've grown to love. And music that I can't remember ever playing before. And I think this one falls into the category of stuff I didn't hear before. Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Cash.
I walked through a county courthouse square. On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said, "Your old courthouse is kind of run down." He said, "No, it'll do for our little town." I said, "Your old flagpole has leaned a little bit, and that's a ragged old flag you got hanging on it." He said, "Have a seat," and I sat down. "Is this the first time you've been to our little town?" I said, "I think it is." He said, "I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag. You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across the Delaware. And it got powder burned the night that Francis Scott Key sat watching it write and say, 'Can you see?' And it got a bad rip in New Orleans with Pakenham and Jackson tugging at its seams. And it almost fell at the Alamo beside the Texas flag, but she waved on, though. She got cut with a sword at Chancellorsville, and she got cut again at Shiloh Hill. There was Robert E. Lee, Beauregard, and Bragg, and the south wind blew hard on that ragged old flag. On Flanders Field in World War I, she got a big hole from a Bertha gun. She turned blood red in World War II, She hung limp and low a time or two. She was in Korea, Vietnam. She went where she was sent by her Uncle Sam. She waved from our ships upon the briny foam, and now they've about quit waving back here at home. In her own good land here, she's been abused. She's been burned, dishonored, denied, and refused. And the government for which she stands is scandalized throughout the land. And she's getting threadbare and she's wearing thin, but she's in good shape for the shape she's in. 'Cause she's been through the fire before. And I believe she can take a whole lot more. So we raise her up every morning. We take her down every night. We don't let her touch the ground, and we fold her up right. On second thought, I do like to brag, 'cause I'm mighty proud of that ragged old flag.
The Man in Black, Johnny Cash, and the Ragged Old Flag. And I put a thing on my notes today for the program, patriotic music, and I put patriotic in quotes. So it is whatever you think it is. A lot of people love that kind of stuff. We have the patriotic song that lives in infamy coming up toward the end of the show here. Let's talk real quick. We had some trouble connecting with this fellow here, so I'm going to try to get him right on. His name is Rishi Sharma. And Rishi, let's see if I can make this work here. Good morning.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Rishi is from a project called HeroesOfTheSecondWorldWar.org, in which you all go around and you interview living veterans. And unfortunately, there aren't that many of them, and they're passing. So, and I looked at your website. It's pretty compelling. You go around and you're trying to get video stuff. Tell me about that. Go ahead. When this gets started, you're 23, I think. How did this project enter your life?
Yeah, I mean, first I just want to say, you know, fortunately, you know, knock on wood, the World War II veterans, I always say, are going to be around forever. There's 600,000 of them, according to the VA, that are still alive in the U.S., 500,000 in the U.K., 100,000 in Canada, and another 100,000 in Australia and New Zealand. And so I created this nonprofit when I was in high school, and I just was always interested in history, and I would ride my bike to the local retirement home, and I wanted to start actually meeting veterans in person outside of my, you know, community. And so the local paper did a story about my mission to interview veterans, and people all across Southern California started contacting me, and this is about the same time I graduated from high school, and I figured this is what I want to do with my life, and so I created that nonprofit, Heroes of the Second World War, and we basically film interview World War II combat veterans of the Allied countries. I hit the road right after I graduated, and so I've been across 45 states, Canada, the UK, Australia, and New Zealand interviewing these heroes, and I've been honored to meet just over 1,100 so far. They're all filmed interviews. We meet the veterans, interview them, put the interviews on DVDs and mail it to them. We're also in the process of expanding the oral history team so that there are other people like me regionally interviewing these veterans. It's just so important to capture the stories of their sacrifices and valor so that we will never forget and never have an excuse to forget what these men went through for our way of life, not just in the U.S., but really in the whole world.
Rishi, let me just break in here because I want to make sure they know, people that just tune in, what we're talking about. This is Rishi Sharma, HeroesOfTheSecondWorldWar.org, and it's a project to interview World War II veterans. Rishi, my uncle fought in the Battle of the Bulge. You ever heard of the Battle of the Bulge?
Yes, absolutely. The largest land offensive of the Germans across us, you know, not including the Russian offensive.
What in general or what specifically? Tell me a story. Tell me a story about the veteran that said such and such that moved you so much.
You mean considering the Battle of the Bulge?
No. I'm saying something that you interviewed. I'm saying you said.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Grab something. I'm unbelievably moved by this. Go ahead, talk.
I mean, what you have to understand, sir, is that all these veterans of World War II, they have very similar life stories. They grew up tough in the Great Depression. They either volunteered or lied about their age after the attack on Pearl Harbor, or if they were one of those other countries, it was when the war was declared in 39, and they went to fight. They fought in the worst war in the history of the world. I mean, it's not like World War II is just one of these wars. It's literally the worst, 70 million killed. They came back home, and they didn't want any parades, or they weren't trying to be celebrities. They just wanted to get their old jobs back and to raise a family, and that's what they've done. You know, these men, some of the one of the veterans I recently interviewed is actually in that Chicago area, and he was 19 years old when he enlisted in the Army, goes through some training, gets sent overseas. This is right before the Battle of the Bulge. It was the battle for Aachen, Germany, which was basically the first town in the German border that the U.S. forces took. And he had been there about a week and a half. And he was laying in his foxhole one night, and he said he could hear German voices just, you know, about 50 yards ahead of him. But it's, you know, it's pitch black at night. And the Germans started throwing mortars, which are, you know, little rockets, you know, that you put on the ground, you put the missile in it, and you fire it. But he started hearing mortar explosions going off around him, and the next thing he knows, one lands right in his foxhole, and it blows both of his legs off.
Oh, no.
And he didn't even realize it, but when he said when he tried moving, he couldn't move.
Oh.
And that's what I found so interesting about him. It wasn't necessarily the fact that he had both of his legs blown off at 19, but it was more about his attitude. And it really, he came back home, and he got prosthetics fitted, and he then dedicated the next 40 years of his life working for the VA, making prosthetics for other veterans who had other amputee veterans. And his family told me, and I can vouch for this now that, you know, that because I've interacted with the veteran himself, he never complained about a situation once. I mean, you would think that someone who has both of his legs blown off at 19 years old, you would think he has a pretty good excuse to complain about his situation in life, but he didn't. And so, you know, what he said in the interview is he never let it stop him from doing what he wanted to accomplish in life. And, you know, and that's just the perfect attitude of who these men are. Nothing will stop them from achieving the very best because at a young age, they looked death in its eyes, and they overcame that. And, you know, I've interviewed other veterans who saw, you know, their buddies getting killed ahead of them. You know, but we also have to realize that these men were put in a position at a young age to kill.
Yeah.
And you know, in modern-day society, it's one of those things where you see a person in uniform and you're told not to talk to them about the war. But in reality, we as civilians, we need to embrace the fact that these men fought and killed for our way of life because, you know, the blood's on our hands as well. You know, whether or not we like to admit it, you know, it's only because of us that they were sent there in the first place. And it's, you know, the fact that we get to wake up in a world in which our homes are not bombed out, in which we can go up to anyone and say whatever we want without any fear of repercussion, in which little kids get to dream about their lives 70 years from now. I mean, all of that came at a very heavy cost of real human lives. And we owe it to these men never to forget what they went through and to ask them about it and to learn from it so that World War II will remain the worst war in the history of the world. I mean, the U.S. lost 420,000 men. I mean, and that's such a large number that it does a disservice to each one of those individuals because they had a whole personality and a life ahead of them, and they were as real as you and I.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, the whole purpose of these interviews is to highlight the reality of combat, what these men saw, what they did, and why they did it. Because I'm not comfortable living in a world in which the Kardashians are at the forefront of every person's mind. You know, it should be the veterans. There shouldn't be just one day for Veterans Day. Every day we wake up is Veterans Day because every day we're allowed to wake up without bombs falling is because of veterans.
Rishi, we're running out of time here, and I don't want to give you a short shrift. The name of the website, and it's worth looking at. I just did. It's heroesofthesecondworldwar.org. All of that spelled out. You can donate. You can help Rishi and the other people do this, keep the project going. You know what else is good on that website? They tell you how you can interview a veteran yourself. So, Rishi, how about a rain check? You come back and talk more to us?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm happy to get a veteran online as well.
That would be good. That would be good. I'd love to do that. All right, man. Go ahead.
I would just ask anyone who knows any veterans, please do reach out at heroesofthesecondworldwar.org. We're always looking to document more of these men.
Sounds good. All right. Rishi, thanks, man. And a good Veterans Day to you. Thanks for doing the job.
Thank you.
I don't know what to say. People dedicate their lives to things worth dedicating their lives to. So, wow. Anyway, thus endeth a Veterans Day show. You know, I was thinking this morning, I ended with a really quick story. We're talking about patriotic music. I worked in a radio station a long time ago, and the boss was just a nutcase. He was just crazy. In the book that I was referencing earlier today, I called him Psycho Al. And anyway, it was running this kind of a bombing out radio station. Nothing was happening. And in the middle of this, he decided every day at noon, he would have the station play a patriotic song. And it seemed so square and out of context. And, we all dreaded it. I'm going to forget all that happened because this song debuted on this day. A long time ago. Ladies and gentlemen, Kate Smith.
It's going to be my great, very great privilege to sing for you a song that's never been sung before by anybody. One that was written especially for me by one of the greatest composers in the music field today. It's something more than a song. I feel it's one of the most beautiful compositions that was ever written. A song that will never die. The author, Mr. Irving Berlin, the title, God Bless America.
Mom!